Hello, 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 my friends, and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I hope you all had a wonderful, restful Memorial Day weekend, took some time to ponder the reason for the holiday. Coming up today, downtown Seattle, as we talked about on the show last week, has a lot of work to do before the MLB All-Star Game comes to town. Our friend Jonathan Cho did this great story looking at the situation down near the stadium. I'll tell you, it's a little grotesque. Some blurring was involved. A lot of bleeping was involved. But I've just got to play a story for you this week because it shows that the Seattle... the picture that the world is going to get of Seattle if nothing changes is not good. Also coming up, some escapees from a youth detention center in Washington State. They're back in custody. That's a good thing. But I think it, again, highlights the absurdity of the no youth jail movement. Later on, we're going to play a clip from our Sundays with Subscriber episode where we talked to a mom in the Olympia School District who has just been doing the Lord's work, pushing back against political and social agendas being pushed on kids in our schools. What she has to say is so critically important. And later on, we'll debate New York City making obesity basically a protected class of people. I have my thoughts. I'm sure you have your thoughts as well. So I look forward to hearing them. If you have not become a subscriber to the show already, by the way, please do so. We welcomed a lot of new subscribers over the weekend. If you go undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and if you support the show on Patreon, I'm doing a free 7-day trial right now. So if you've been thinking about becoming a subscriber, you can try us out for 7 days. Now is a great time to do that. Okay, let's start with this story out of Washington State. Some kids, and when I say kids, I really mean hardened criminals, regardless of their age, escaped over the weekend from Echo Glen. And that's a facility that's, if you're not familiar, it's east of Seattle. So it's like, I would say 30 minutes outside of Seattle. It's actually kind of close to my house. So whenever there's an escape from Echo Glen, I'm like, oh, well, that's not good. Be on the lookout. Here's the article from Cairo 7. Convicted teen murderer, two others who escaped detention center arrested, two escapees still. Oh, wait a second. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the story from 2022 because essentially this exact same scenario just happened a few months ago, or a year ago, in January of 2022. It was funny because I was posting the BOLO, the Be On The Lookout. I'll actually show you. This is from the latest incident because 7 of these juveniles escaped in the latest incident. I posted that BOLO on my Facebook page and this woman goes, "You're posting old news. You know, why are you trying to stir things up?" I'm like, no, actually, the same thing just happened again. In fact, one of the exact same juveniles who escaped from the facility back in 2022 was among these 7 who escaped again over the weekend. Now, thankfully, the update, according to the King County Sheriff's Office, they posted earlier today, overnight, the remaining 4 juveniles were captured by Clark County Sheriff's Office and are now in custody. Thank you to the Clark County Sheriff. The investigation into the events surrounding the escape of the 7 juveniles is still ongoing and active. So essentially, as soon as the escape happened, a few of them were wrangled up, and then they put out a BOLO and a couple others. But just to give you an idea of, you know, this isn't just some soft kids who just did something, you know, made a mistake, who've escaped from justice. Some of the crimes that they were at Echo Glen for: robbery, 1, possession of a firearm; assault, 1, possession of a firearm; murder, 2, assault, 2. Murder one, aggravated murder in the first degree, possession of a firearm; assault 1, robbery 1. So these are, regardless of age, hardened, dangerous criminals. And again, this is the second time when there was and escapes from Echo Glen go back years. But when there was the incident last January, again, you had a murderer who escaped from justice. And so I'm glad to hear that they've all been arrested. But I couldn't help but wonder, you know, when I was reminiscing back to the summer of love, the summer of 2020, and the no youth jail movement, which really this is, if you're watching on the video stream, I remember them trying to light the construction of the youth jail in Seattle. There were construction trailers lit on fire because they were so opposed to the idea of young people being incarcerated that rioters actually resorted to arson to try to say, oh, well, they can't incarcerate young people in Seattle if we burn the youth jail down. And at the time, I remember thinking, well, what about the young people who kill people? What about the young people who commit acts like aggravated robbery and assault in the first degree? Where exactly do you want them to go? And I mean, maybe the activists like the fact that they go to Echo Glen because they can escape so easily from Echo Glen, as we have seen over and over. I was also reminiscing about King County Executive Dow Constantine, when in 2020, of course, he jumped on to whatever, you know, was the woke thing to do at the time, which was criminal justice reform or abolition, whichever way you want to talk about it. And he talked about his goal to end youth incarceration.
And we have determinedly, relentlessly worked to drive down the number of youth in custody. The old 212-bed youth detention building is no more. Bulldozed. Nothing but a gravel lot. The new Judge Patricia H. Clark Children and Family Justice Center, with far more room for services and far less for detention, opened on February 15th.
Yeah, so King County Executive Dow Constantine brags about bulldozing the old youth facility in Seattle, and then they're celebrating this facility that's got things like ping pong tables, etc. And I'm like, I mean, we have murderers who are under the age of 18 who are escaping Echo Glen, and you're bragging about moving them into another facility that's got stuff like ping pong tables. And again, Dow Constantine went on to say at the time in 2020 that this lofty goal to end youth detention in the next 5 years.
I will propose capital funding to further reduce the space available for detention and convert it to therapeutic and community use. And I will propose additional investments to help create safe and community-based solutions for the increasingly difficult youth cases that remain, and seek to fully convert the remaining youth detention capacity to other uses as quickly as possible and no later than 2025. To be sure, there are those who will find many reasons why we shouldn't pursue these goals.
Yeah, I'm one of them. I've got many reasons why you shouldn't pursue those goals. Look, having a world where kids aren't incarcerated, of course, that is a noble goal. It's a noble ambition. I mean, when people were debating, you know, defund the police and put that money into community programs, I said, yeah, I mean, we should all support a world where we can defund the police, where we don't need police departments because there is no crime, but that world doesn't exist. That world will never exist. And so when you have someone like Dow Constantine, these no youth jail people burning down construction trailers, and they have this absolutely utopian idea of what society can or should be, there will always be a need to have a secure being the operative word, because I don't think Echo Glen is it. There will always be the need to have secure facilities to house juvenile offenders. You have kids who kill other kids. I wish it weren't that way. I hope as a society we can work on that. But they need to go somewhere where it's going to be secure, not some space where there's, oh, we got ping pong tables and that's somehow going to like rehabilitate young killers. It's very strange to me. So the Echo Glen situation is an absolute issue. And I can't help but think that because of all these, you know, push for no youth detention, comments from people like Dow Constantine about how, oh, we need therapeutic solutions for these young people, I can't help but think that that's why we have so many escapes from Echo Glen. That here you have these offenders who have committed very adult crimes being handled with kid gloves. And you have, you know, the last incident, I think, and Nicole, correct me if I'm wrong, the last incident happened because there was a jail guard who brought a knife in to cut an avocado, is that what
right.
It is? And then these kids beat him up and got the knife that cut the avocado.
Yep.
And in this latest one, a staff member was doing routine night shifts when she was assaulted by these young men, two of whom killed someone. And then they stole a vehicle and took off. I mean, a year after almost the exact same incident happened. So again, you know, no youth jail and youth incarceration, is that a great ambition for a society to work toward? 100% I'm on board. That is not the society that we're living in today. So again, you cannot handle offenders who have committed heinous adult crimes with kid gloves simply because of their age. And if these incidents have not shown that at Echo Glen, I simply do not know what will. Okay, coming up next, we talked on the show last week about the MLB All-Star Game coming to Seattle. And look, fine, I just happen to think that Seattle's not ready for it. I happen to think that we shouldn't want the eyes of the world on us when we aren't sure that we can keep people safe who are coming here, when we have this horrible drug crisis and crime crisis playing out in the heart of the city between the hotel district and the stadiums. That's the worst of it, right by Pike Place Market. So we're going to have all these tourists coming in, and what are they going to see? And I talked on the show last week about how I know what's going to happen. The city of Seattle is going to go in, huge police presence in the days leading up to the All-Star game, and then as soon as the All-Star game's done, the police will pull out and they'll go back to doing what they were doing. And that's unfortunate that they have to do that. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be an increased police presence when you've got a bunch of people in town, but that's not solving the problem. And we shouldn't have invited such an important event to our city when it's in the state that it's in. So anyway, our friend Jonathan Cho went down to SoDo over the weekend. And he is, of course, an independent journalist and senior fellow for Discovery Institute. And he talked to some folks down there who worked down there about what they were seeing, about the state of things, and whether the city could truly turn things around. I will warn you, if the sight of blood makes you uneasy, you maybe want to avert your eyes. I did some tasteful blurring, but what he saw is frankly horrendous.
Just want to see if you needed help. It looks infected. Do you want to go to the hospital?
He'd be out here all the time, though.
Yeah.
Why can't we help him? Why can't we get him off the streets?
You don't want help.
You know, some people don't want the help.
It's normally wrapped up. I don't know where to wrap it.
I haven't seen it exposed.
I've never seen it like that.
He's out here like, daily, though.
He really ain't got no foot. Like,
I didn't see it like that.
Bro, that's really an open sore. It's
not bleeding nothing, but, you know.
It was bleeding.
He bleeding sometimes.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering if he's...
through the wrap.
You've seen it all.
Yeah.
It almost seems like you're used to it now.
Yeah.
Is it getting better, though, in SoDo? Because
Nah. They didn't clear some out, you know. I know you've seen this, but...
Right across the street.
It ain't getting better.
They just moved around.
You know, they just moved right there.
Right across the street. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is coming in July.
Oh, that's true.
You think the city's going to be ready for that?
Hell no.
Nah, we're going to make something happen. It's going to happen. They're coming.
So I'm going to ask you a question. How you think they're helping by legalizing the shit they're smoking and they know it's killing people?
You're talking about the lawmakers really decriminalizing everything.
How is that helping? But you guys want to bring the All-Star Game here and we got people running around here with no feet bleeding and shit. But you need is encouraging them to get high by legalizing the shit you don't want them smoking. I bet you can ask anybody this. They know crackheads. I know crackheads that have been smoking crack 20, 30 years.
Around,
ain't never had a crackhead die, heard one dying smoking
great
crack.
Jobs.
But they smoking fentanyl. Me and him smoking. I'm smoking, I die. He going, pick it up and hit it too.
I'm gone.
Like, what?
So fentanyl's a brand new class of drug.
I don't know if it's in the endorphins or what.
We be having
customers come up in here. They be high off fentanyl, like perks and shit. They be in here rocking, falling asleep, itching like a motherfucker.
Oh my god,
that shit's cool. They gotta have a plan, and they have to really be on top of it.
Yeah, and like he says, we're going to bring people here and we've got folks going around with no feet, bleeding out, you know, on fentanyl and scratching themselves. Those were two characters that Jonathan Cho found. But, you know, what they're showing there in that depths of despair, when you've got some guy who's missing a foot and has an open wound where his foot should be, that's not something that can be fixed overnight. What do we do with someone like that? And we're inviting baseball fans to come to Seattle. And Jonathan also took this other video over the weekend. I should have played it, but we're going to play a couple clips from him today, where there was this fight, knockdown, drag out fight between drug addicts on Third Avenue. And I just see this dad like ushering his kids along on by on the sidewalk. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm terrified. I don't want people to come to our city and be victimized. We've done stories in the last couple weeks of tourists, you know, a guy who he's in town for 2 hours, an attorney from out of town. He's in town for 2 hours. And he gets stabbed right by his hotel. And that's horrifying. We don't want that to be the picture that the world gets. And speaking of, Todd Welch in the comments just now said, we're only a few years away from hosting the World Cup matches. And so it's like, so MLB All-Star Game, the country's watching. And then World Cup, the world's watching. And there is so much work that has to be done. And I just don't, I want them to come to a city that is the beautiful city I remember 10 years ago. That's what we should all want. And then, you know, if we have people now who come and they get a bad impression, they're never coming back. You know, if they see some guy in a wheelchair with no foot that's bleeding, they're not going to bring their family back to Seattle. I hate to laugh, but sometimes you need to laugh so you don't cry. But one other clip I wanted to play from Jonathan, because I got a text from Olga Sagan over the weekend saying, you know, and Olga's running for Seattle City Council downtown district. And she said, hey, you know, there's a picture that just got sent to me from a business owner in SoTo who runs this Pokemon. Nicole was making fun of my Pokemon. Pokemon.
Pokemon is correct. You were saying Pokemon.
Pokemon
earlier.
Well, a Pokemon shop runs a Pokemon shop and shows up and there's a bullet hole through the glass. This is a shop where kids come to play Pokemon, of course, and you've got a bullet hole right through your front window. Thank God no one was hurt. Here's a little clip of Jonathan Cho talking to the guy.
Bullet hole through the window right here, and I think this is the bullet hole, or the bullet.
Is it still in there?
I think so. We'll wait for the cops to get here and
try
it out.
Okay.
And hopefully it's, I hope nobody was shot here last night.
Yeah, I mean, I hope nobody was shot there last night either, but somebody, if that had been in the middle of the day and the trajectory was just a little off, Jonathan also had some video of kids in there playing Pokemon cards. And it's like, we have to care more about the safety of those kids and the ability of that business owner to run a business that's safe for kids than we should care about the criminals who are using guns to commit crimes. Oftentimes that's tied to substance abuse and drug deals. And unless we are all rowing in the same direction, where we're going to enforce the laws that are on the books, we're going to try to be compassionate, but we're not going to have a tolerance for this kind of activity bringing down a once great city. Unless we're all rowing in the same direction. I mean, the MLB All-Star Game, too late to fix things before that. But the World Cup, hopefully we can get things back on track. But we also shouldn't want things to be fixed just for visitors, just for tourists. We should want our beautiful city back for ourselves, for the enjoyment of families, and for the success of small businesses, particularly in Seattle, which is the economic engine of our entire state. Okay, coming up next, I'm going to play for you a clip of an awesome interview we aired on Sundays with subscribers with a mom from the Olympia School District who is leading the way when it comes to the social and political agendas of teachers being pushed on kids. So I'm going to play a clip from that. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? Well, why would you not choose to sell it with our friend Wes Jones at Wes Jones & Associates? Him and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to get you the highest possible offer with the fewest possible contingencies.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwest.com and go to the sell a house feature. And you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website. And, you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm going to treat you fairly.
Yeah, and speaking of the sad state of Seattle, Wes has been working with a lot of his clients who are leaving, you know, trying to move further away from Seattle or even leaving the state, which is such a bummer. It's such a beautiful place. But if you're thinking you're moving to Texas, Florida, Idaho, Montana, somewhere like that, Wes Jones has had a lot of clients that sold their homes in Washington State to move elsewhere. And again, he's just very knowledgeable about this market. He's been doing this for a long time. So check out sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. We had an awesome interview on our Sunday show. If you're not a subscriber already, definitely go sign up so you can check this interview out, because I've had a lot of you say, Brandy, you need to talk more about issues related to public education and the state of our public schools. And there is a mom named Alicia Perkins who has already sent two kids through the Olympia School District. She has another, her daughter's a senior. Her and her husband both graduated from the Olympia School District, and they have seen it, especially in the past few years, really transform from a place focused on learning and educating kids to a place where there is a big segment of the teachers there who are trying to push a political and social agenda on their students. And Alicia Perkins, the first time she really started to speak up about it is when a woman named Talana Reed was appointed to the school board. Now, that name might sound familiar because it was very controversial because there were clips of her outside the state capitol, I believe it was, calling cops pigs and talking about property destruction. Listen.
And it amazes me how those pigs can sit over there to watch us peacefully discuss, talk about what we want changed in this state. It amazes me. And they don't pay attention until we tear shit up. So just see, before I get started, tear everything up in this fucking city until they do what we want them to do.
So Alicia Perkins saw that. Reasonable mom, reasonable person, reasonable parent, and thought, hey, I don't want someone who calls cops pigs and who encourages property destruction to be on the school board in charge of decisions for my child's education. You know, she brought it up to the school board and the school, other parents did, and they got nowhere. And then things just continued on from there. You know, we talked about a story in the Olympia School District where they created these safe spaces for BIPOC students away from white students. Like these little clubs for grade schoolers where, depending on the color of your skin, you were either allowed or not allowed. And there was also, and I think this to me is one of the most wild ones so far out of the Olympia School District, where they were facing some budgetary decisions. And they decided to cut fourth grade band and wind instruments, in part because it contributes to an environment of white supremacy. Listen.
There are other folks in the community that experience things like a tradition of excellence as exclusionary. And I don't think that there's just one or two or 10 or 20 people that think that. But that's not unique to elementary instrumental music. We're a school district that lives in, is an entrenched in, and is surrounded by white supremacy culture. And that's a real thing. And there's nothing about string or wind instrumental music that is intrinsically white supremacist. However, the ways in which it is, and the ways in which all of our institutions, not just schools, but local government, state government, our churches, our neighborhoods, inculcate and allow white supremacy culture to continue to be propagated and cause significant institutional violence, are things that we have to think about carefully as a community.
Like, again, that's a school board meeting where they're talking about budget cuts and they're talking about fourth grade band and wind instruments. And they got to listen to that tirade from the school board. This isn't about black and white. It's not even about, you know, conservative values versus progressive values. It's about common sense. It's about reasonable versus unreasonable. And so Alicia Perkins, as a mom, has really spoken up and put herself out there. And on Sundays with Subscribers, we talked to her about how scary that can be, but also about her belief that reasonable parents really need to get involved to stop this from happening. As a white parent mm-hmm. who raised concerns about, you know, the principles of Black Lives Matter being taught to students, were you concerned about what that could mean for you or for your child?
I was not, but sometimes I think there's something wrong with me because I'm not overly concerned about what people say. The way that I've approached things is to just present the facts. So when I showed people these are the 13 principles, I'm unclear what this has to do with Black History Month at all. This is really a belief system that most people don't subscribe to, from an organization that has been roundly discredited, in my opinion, objectively.
Yeah.
Why is this now being pushed on these children in elementary school and up? I have been called, you know, racist and things like that, but I have yet to see anyone coming back on the facts. So that's kind of just where I left it, and I don't really respond.
What kind of struggle is it for parents right now, seeing some of these issues with the public education system? What kind of challenges exist when deciding how do we move forward with our kids' education?
I think that the parents who have the means are moving on. So the way I've kind of started to look at it is that our district may turn into more of a niche district that kind of like an Evergreen State College where they've decided that they're going to go down this road. And if you don't like it, you can make another choice. And so what I'm seeing is hundreds, literally hundreds of parents have left the district and they're making another choice. So it's almost like a business where you're offering a product. When the quality of that product is not what you want, you seek another product. Unfortunately, the people who are able to do that usually have the means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to homeschool, that usually means you have one parent at home. To do private school, that means you have the means to pay for private school in addition to the taxes that you're already paying for public school. So it's becoming a difficult choice, and I think it's going to be dangerous with what we're left with if we don't get back to a public education system where most people want to put their child.
Yeah, and I'm curious what impact you think this is going to have on kids, because you know your kids are all close to adulthood, mm-hmm. if not already adults. Mm-hmm. But for instance, there was a story out of the Olympia School District where they're talking about the white supremacy that exists in like fifth grade band or something like that. Right. Like we're talking craziness.
Right.
And I played that rant for our viewers and I just could not believe that it was real. And right. so, and then there was the other story that had to do with, again, for grade schoolers, like segregated groups for BIPOC students only, like no white students allowed. So when you have these younger kids that are basically, that's their whole experience in public education to this point, what impact do you think that that is going to have on them?
Well, so when I found out about the BIPOC clubs, which was fairly early on, before it even, you know, went out into the news media, I was hearing from parents who were actually in some of those classes who had students in these classes, and they said, you know, my child is coming home and saying, am I BIPOC? Am I allowed to go to this? And the answer is, no, you're white, so you can't go to this. And what it made me think of is my brother, who is biracial. And had I been in school during all of this, my brother would have essentially been told that his own sister was unsafe, because that's the, you know, rhetoric that they use.
They're saying they're safe spaces.
Safe spaces, right, from me, who is white. So I would essentially be separated from my brother. And I just am so thankful that this was not happening when we were growing up, because, and then what do kids do that are biracial? You know, I hear from a lot of families who have a mixed race couple with a biracial child that are really stuck in the middle of all of this racial stuff.
Yeah, and if you want to check that interview out, you can visit undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com to watch the full thing on Sundays with subscribers. But I just thought it's such an important conversation, because what I really value about Alicia is the way she's so matter-of-fact, she's not a bomb thrower, and she's talking again about reasonable versus unreasonable. This isn't about acting like racism doesn't exist. It's about not furthering divisions with our kids in school before they're even old enough to think about, you know, the differences between black and white. And some of these things, it just goes back to plain common sense. Why would we have clubs for kids based on the color of their skin? Why would we suggest that something as innocent as fourth grade band is somehow perpetuating a culture of white supremacy because it's encouraging kids to reach for excellence? And so, you know, like Alicia talks about in our interview, it is, you know, the schools are such an important place for reasonable parents, grandparents, even to be involved, to run for school boards, even though it might be a scary proposition. And I love Alicia saying, well, I guess I'm just weird because I really don't care what people have to say about me, because she's talking about race as a white mom at a very difficult time to have a conversation about that issue. So I hope she can be an example. I hope she can be an inspiration to other parents who hear about these things and they're fed up, but they haven't kind of taken the next step to actually get involved in bringing attention to these issues and maybe getting directly involved in their child's school. So loved Alicia. We'll definitely have her back on the show. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure to sign up for their newsletter. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, I might bring Nicole into this because this is a Nicole story that you wanted to pick today, and I think it was interesting. So Kirk Cameron was in town for his new book, and I didn't really know. Kirk Cameron has been more of like a cultural issue lately, but it's from Growing Pains, right?
Yes, Growing Pains.
Growing Pains. Mm-hmm. See, that's why I need you for these.
Did you watch Growing Pains?
I don't really recall it.
When I was pretty young, okay. So I was even younger.
I know it in theory.
Yes.
But so he comes into town because he's got a new book out, and it's a kid's book, mm-hmm. and it has been called by some anti-gay, which he rejects wholesale.
Right.
He says it's about the dangers of pride from a biblical perspective and trying to teach
the
biblical lesson to kids.
Right, just pride in general, pride.
Right. He says mm-hmm. it's not anti-gay, it's pro-humanity. Mm-hmm. And look, he has, you know, talked about how he doesn't believe that, you know, like LGBTQ in terms of the Bible. And he's very religious. So let's just put that way.
Yes.
Very religious guy, mm-hmm. which is fine. You know, yes. as long as you're not trying to force your religion on other right. people, as long as you're not trying to like force your hope, open your book and be like, read this to a little child while their eyes are pried right. open. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's coming to Seattle, and he had this book thing with Coach Kennedy,
yep.
who's the Bremerton coach and the whole Supreme Court thing with praying on the field. So naturally, right, some protesters show up to this event. It wasn't very many. I think in the grand scheme of things, this is an article from Fox. Seattle protesters tell patriotic Kirk Cameron he's growing to be a real pain. That was one of the signs, is growing
Clever.
To be a real pain. But why we chose this for Unbelievable today is I was shocked mm-hmm. that public libraries didn't cancel the event.
I know.
I was like, can we get a... Are we making movements? Is this momentum? Again, I think that whenever you have this sort of push to cancel somebody whose ideology doesn't, you know, align with yours, we have seen too often entities give in to that. In Seattle Public Libraries, I'm like, oh, they'll for sure give in. But they sent out a tweet saying, many of you are asking why we would allow this booking, citing the author's views on abortion, LGBTQ+ rights, and more. We understand these questions. We are committed to intellectual freedom, even when viewpoints expressed do not align with our values. This is unbelievable. I never thought I'd be clapping for Seattle Public Libraries, but it's true. And again, you can choose whether to bring your child to the book reading. You don't mm-hmm. have to go. No one's making you go. And that's why, as an example, I don't really care about drag queen story time. As long as it is not some sort of weird sexual thing, like we've seen some weird clips mm-hmm. from drag queen events where I'm like, you're just exposing yourself to a child and that's against the law. So as long, you know, I saw some drag queen story times where it's like a drag queen dressed as a cute old lady reading a book to kids, right. fine. Bring your kids to that if right. you want to.
And as long as they're not saying no to some and saying yes to others.
Right.
Just, it's a space and you're asked to rent a space. Now, I know some people will be like, what if, like, you know, Satan worshipers, blah, blah, yeah. blah. Like, no, it's a private space and you have a choice to attend.
Right.
I think it's not indoctrination. It's not bringing it into school and telling kids that they have to listen to this lesson or right. listen to Kirk Cameron or listen to, you know, a drag queen. I think that's where people get frustrated. And to separate those, I'm excited that Seattle Public Libraries acknowledge the difference.
Yeah, as long as it's not against the law or being yeah. forced on someone. And that's why I make the distinction of against the law, because mm-hmm. there are some drag events where I'm like, no, that is
oh,
indecent
yeah, the
sexual, exposure,
yes, exactly.
and that's against the law.
The sexualization, blah, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but I think this is great for Seattle Public Libraries, which is supposed to be an institution of learning funded by taxpayer dollars, to stand up to Seattle's crazy, what can be a crazy woke mob on the left,
right.
and say, no, we're going to do this event just as we would a book that conservatives or people who are very religious might not like. So Good, unbelievable. Yes. Unbelievable in a good way today.
Yes, exciting.
Good story selection, Nicole.
And I like that Kirk came to Seattle and, you know, nothing terrible happened. You could have protesters with their opinions out there, but nobody was terrible to him. And like, good.
Right. And that's the thing. The signs were pretty tame.
They were.
I love a good protester.
Yeah.
I love a good pro. You want to come out and protest Kirk Cameron? The thing that gives him the ability to be there reading his book to kids that people don't like is the same thing that gives you the ability to be outside protesting it. I think it's all.
And there were plenty of supporters.
Peacefully. Yeah. And there were plenty of supporters.
Mm-hmm. So go for it.
Love it, Seattle. More of this. More of this. Okay, coming up next, we're going to have a discussion around whether obese people should be a protected class under the law. But first, I've been talking a lot about First Mark Insurance and my decision to do the First Mark Challenge. And I've heard from some of you. I've had now three people come up to me at different events saying, hey, I took the First Mark Challenge, which I love. So First Mark is an insurance broker. So they're going to look at what you already have insurance-wise for everything, your vehicle, your home, life insurance. I mean, ring insurance is something that came up for me. And they're going to go over everything you have. And then they're going to go out and they're going to see if they can find you better insurance or insurance that's just as good as the stuff you got for cheaper. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says, even if you walk away and you decide to keep what you already have, you still benefit from the First Mark Challenge.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with, okay? Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are gonna become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like I said, all it costs you is a little bit of time. You could save a lot of money. You could dramatically improve your insurance, better protect the things you've worked so hard for. And all it costs you is a little bit of time with First Mark to go over your needs and to talk about it. And at the end of the day, if you walk away and decide, I'm going to stick with the insurance I already have, then all you've lost, like I said, is a little bit of time. So check out First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and click on the link to take the First Mark Challenge. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State for a moment. New York City's mayor, Eric Adams, is the most hot and cold human being. He does things where I'm like, good for you. And then he does things where I'm like, what's wrong with you? What is wrong with you? I cannot decide where I stand on Eric Adams. But anyway, he signed a bill that outlaws weight discrimination in New York City. Here's the headline from Fox. Mayor Eric Adams signs bill outlawing weight discrimination in New York City. And there are some critics of this saying, oh, this is just red meat for the ambulance chasing lawyers to just sue over every little thing. And when he was signing it, he said, I'm a person that believes in health. So when you talk about not discriminating against someone because of their body type, it's not fighting against obesity. It's just being fair. So I think this is the right thing to do. We're going to continue to talk about our progressive health agenda. Science has shown body type is not a connection to if you're healthy or unhealthy. And I think that's a misnomer we're really dispelling, first of all. Body type is not necessarily a connection to whether you're healthy or unhealthy. But being clinically obese, of course, has a connection to whether you're healthy, how long you're able to live. And I posted a question about this for you guys in the live chat saying, should overweight people be a protected class? 6% say yes, 94% say no. But here's the thing. I'm trying to think about what ways you might be discriminated against if you're heavy. So I can see in some fantasy land, I don't think this happens anymore, some sort of artificial vain discrimination like, oh, hey, we can't have you working as the secretary because you're not thin enough and you make us look bad. Do you really think that's still happening? I just really don't think that that's happening. The other thing I can see is if you're having trouble performing certain aspects of your job because of your weight, then you getting fired for that and you saying, hey, I was discriminated against on the basis of my weight, or if you have some sort of weight-related health issue, but isn't that against the law already? Because wouldn't that be considered a disability? If you have something because of your weight or your height, because that's included in this, that is preventing you from being able to do your job in a certain way, and you're fired over that, and you weren't accommodated for whatever disability you might have, there's already laws that protect you from being discriminated against over your disability. So I guess, one, I'm a little worried that this is sort of a slippery slope, and that it also kind of encourages, I don't want to say encourages obesity, but, you know, obesity isn't healthy. And I think it's okay for us to acknowledge that. You know, there's been all these sort of body positivity movements where you have high-end fashion brands who have models who are like 400 pounds. I just saw a Calvin Klein one the other day where it's like, wow, that person is physically not well. And I just don't think that you should be lifting that up as some sort of beauty standard. I think that's weird. But the only way that I can see a rationale for this is if you have cases where someone is told, like, hey, you can't work in the women's clothing department because you're obese and we don't think people will want to buy clothes from you. But I just happen, maybe you can look this up, Nicole. I just happen to think that there have to be other laws, like some blanket discrimination law that would be like, yeah, that's not a good reason to fire someone. So I was really curious to hear you guys' thoughts. If you have any thoughts on whether this should be a thing, whether it's necessary, leave them in the comments. But I just happen to think it's another one of those, you know, laws in search, solution in search of a problem, where it's like one person brought this up because they feel a certain way. And so now we've got to pass a whole law against it. And now all these ambulance chasing attorneys are going to be like, hey, do you think maybe you were fired because you're 20 pounds overweight or something? It seems completely unnecessary to me. Okay, coming up next, we're going to get your comments from the feed today. Got a lot of comments to catch up on. But first, I didn't intentionally put the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic after the New York obesity story. Oh, I didn't do this intentionally. However, I've been talking a lot about my own health journey and the fact that I put on quite a bit of weight. I was feeling unhealthy, I will say that. It wasn't just about looks. I was feeling very unhealthy after the pandemic for 3 years. I'd put on 42 pounds. I've now shed more than 35 pounds of that on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And I'm just looking and feeling better. And that is just the honest to God truth. And I've heard from so many of you. I posted this picture of a subscriber to the show, Ben Bailey, who sent us an email with his before and after. And he was saying, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. And when I posted that picture over the weekend, so many of you, there's Ben, I'm just looking great. So many of you chimed in and said, oh, you know, I'm 10 pounds down, I'm 20 pounds down on the program. And so I've been really happy to see that some of you are having success. If you'd like to sign on to the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan before summer, you still have time to really be looking and feeling your best, go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com and schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan. You can do it virtually and he can tell you about the program and whether it's right for you. Note to self, don't put my weight loss commercials next to a story. Or maybe that's the perfect place for it. Maybe that's the perfect place for
it.
Okay, Nicole, shall we get into comments from the day?
Yeah, let's do it.
Thomas said of the weight thing, I'm overweight and I did it to myself. Maybe protect the Oreos from me. Oh, an Oreo sounds good, doesn't it? It's been a long time since I've had an Oreo.
It has been a long time since I've had one. With milk.
Oh, that chocolate sounds milk. Good. They have those little thin Oreos now where it's like a thin, like half the size.
Yep.
I'm assuming half the calories, but you know, you get a little treat from an Oreo, but not quite as much stuffing.
Right. I want the cream though. I'm okay with less cookie, more cream.
Oh, no, I think
those half them both, I think.
Yeah, those are, wow, mm-hmm. This is not a commercial for Oreo. That's a thinner Oreo cookie and thinner cream filling. Right. Okay. Larry says, as a bigger dude carrying around an extra 40-ish pounds, why would I expect the world to cater to me? I could eat less and work out more if I wanted to change it. Eh, good point. Mm-hmm. From Crafty Grandma Crispy, my weight, my choice. Speaking of Crafty Grandma, I have to do a reveal of something we got in the mail. So Crafty Grandma sent us our keychains. Oh, I don't have my keys near me. Well, a little undivided keychains. Mm-hmm. And that got us talking on the podcast about why don't the rest of you send us gifts, which was totally sarcastic. However, we did get one. I want to make sure nobody's addresses show.
Okay. Am I supposed to open my
drawer? No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm going to read the card we got. This is so cute. It almost made me cry.
Okay.
Okay. So this is from, I think it's pronounced Yasuko. Yasuko, sorry if I butcher that. Dear Brandy, I've been following you since the CHOP coverage and admired your courage and I think it's a serene mind to talk about politics with such common sense and truth. When you started Undivided, I immediately asked my husband if I could subscribe to your show, and I've been enjoying every show. Thank you for holding politicians accountable and calling out their BS or commending their good decisions. I hope you and Nicole will enjoy my little gift. I make small stuffed animals as a hobby and have my husband give them to children he comes across and his work as a police officer. Oh, I love this. I had to do patriotic for you ladies. She talks about what she got us, but I'm going to show mine before I make you. You haven't seen yours. I put it in Nicole's desk drawer. So it's this adorable, like, is that like crochet?
Yes, a crochet. It looks like a little bear.
Which is now going to go on the shelf behind me. It's adorable. It's patriotic, which is perfect. So I got a bear. Nicole, do you want to look in the drawer and see what she made you?
Oh, it's a cat.
Oh my God, I love it. It says, I made a kitty for Nicole. Sorry, I still haven't found a cute puppy dog pattern for me. When I do, I'll make another one. No, I love the bear. The bear is very, how cute is that?
That is adorable.
Oh my gosh, this is so nice. I got this over the weekend. I was so stressed. I was like, what is this box? I'm always suspicious of boxes. I was like, I'll open it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this. And that her husband gives them out.
That is adorable.
In his work as a police officer, which I think is absolutely amazing.
So cute.
So we're going to cherish these. Oh my God, you guys, why do we have such creative, artsy, talented
My grandma taught me to crochet when I was little, but I could never figure out how to crochet into anything. It was always just squares. So I just had doll blankets.
Yeah, this is like more. This is going to go on the bookshelf.
I love
it. I'm super excited. Oh my gosh, I love it so much.
Thank you
so much. This is so kind.
Thank you.
I want to put him somewhere where you can see him.
So cute.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anyway, I had to share that. I forgot. But crafty grandma had me remembering. Okay, Mandy said on the obesity issue, why do we blame the people and not the food or forks? That's a rhetorical question, as I'm comparing obesity to mental illness, where it's up to the person to get help versus blaming the tools of violence. Yeah, it's like a gun doesn't kill someone, a person kills someone. Okay, Dan says, recently New Zealand Airlines is exploring weighing passengers before having them board.
That's not exploring, and they're doing it. I heard that that started this week, I believe, which I was just on them last in March, right?
Yeah, when
on our trip, and I'm very glad I didn't have to get on scale. But they claim that it's for weight distribution on the plane.
As long as they're not announcing it out to the world.
I hope you don't see it. So there was an airline I was on in Australia where they weighed your carry-on as you got on. And if it was even a pound over or a kilo over, then you had to pay right there. And they told me, I mean, it cost me, I was 1 kilo over and it cost me $65. And they said, and I was like, well, what if I take out, like, I have food.
I know
you
hate
that.
And you're cheap.
I am cheap. And I was like, what if I take out some stuff? And she goes, we're leaving.
Oh,
and I was like, okay, so this would be embarrassing if your weight is different and they're like, we have to move you, right?
Yeah.
So even if they don't flash your weight up, but if they look at you and they're like, meh, you need to go over there.
I think you can eyeball it, right, though, because Dan says, in my opinion, this is a legitimate safety concern for planes and morbidly obese people should pay for an extra seat. And yes, they should. There are rules about that. And I think if you have someone they can eyeball and be like, no, look, you need two seats, right?
Right.
I don't know, getting away, somebody. Okay, on the MLB All-Star Game coming to Seattle, Oceana writes, when baseball comes to Seattle, they will do exactly what they did during the Goodwill games. They will push out the addicts and homeless, push them out of sight. And I completely agree. Weiss Castle says, are you kidding? I want Seattle to fall flat on its face during the All-Star Game. I want the embarrassment. How else will we get change? Man, I don't necessarily disagree.
Well, I mean, I don't want anybody to get hurt,
no, right.
But
no,
to look disgusting or whatever, to actually look the way it looks to the rest of us, or to have people highlight the way that people are being treated on the streets because they're just being left there.
Yeah, maybe good public shaming is in order, but you know what the MLB will do is they'll do sweeping videos of the sound and the fairies coming in. And
It's not good for them either, so they're not going to highlight that.
And they'll show the mountain behind the Space Needle and all these beautiful things. They're not going to be down on street level on 3rd Avenue with the guy who's got a nub for a foot rolling around in his wheelchair that's bleeding out. Like, they're just not going to do
that. The only way it makes the news or that it goes bigger as if somebody gets hurt.
And I really hope it doesn't happen. You gotta be careful, though. Rick Johnson says, we used to be so proud of Seattle. Now it's a colossal embarrassment. It's disgusting and it's not safe for anyone. This should tell us that we need to crack down hard and fix our city. It's ridiculous. Yeah, like I said, it has to be everyone rowing in the same direction. And I mean, all gas, no brakes when it comes to enforcing all the laws we have on the books. And that's why I'm hoping for a clean sweep of the city council.
Well, and it would be nice if they, because they waive this money in front of the city, right? MLB and
$2 million or something.
Right. So they waive this money in front. And it would be nice if they said, we want to come 6 months before and make sure that you're on the right track. Yes. Instead of just saying, we're going to show up the day before and make sure it looks all right.
Well, they might be showing up for some site visits. I have to imagine somewhere along the line, this has been discussed with the MLB in Seattle. Because even when conventions come to Seattle, I remember I used to talk to visit Seattle a lot. They would have to convince conventions, here's what we're going to do to try to make sure that your 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, because they'd have conventions that big.
Right.
You're talking about tens of millions of dollars in economic, in revenue potentially pouring into the economy. They'd have to they'd have commanders, command staff come in, meet with convention planners to assure them, here's what we're going to do to try to keep people safe. I guarantee that's happening.
Oh, I'm sure it's happening for the, you know, the weeks of surrounding the event. But I think that it would, if they let everybody know, this is what we're trying to get from them, like make sure that it's like this leading up to the event.
Right. 100%. On Seattle Public Library's not canceling Kirk Cameron's book event, Vicky says, yay, Seattle Public Library. I'm really surprised. Austin says, unbelievable that they did not cancel a book reading. I guess that's where society is now. That is. That's why we made that unbelievable, because especially in Seattle, it's a little unbelievable. On the Olympia School District, just being this poster child for a woke curriculum gone awry, TJ says on Patreon, as for the segregation and race baiting in schools, it takes all parents to respond, student-teacher conferences, meetings with school administrators, school board meetings. If people just gripe on social media, nothing will happen. The simple objection is simply to warn school staffs not to bring politics or sexuality into the classroom. It is not their place. It must be long and strong from the masses to overcome the volume of the minuscule minority. And also, one of the things I asked Alicia that I kind of didn't know how to ask it, but I was like, it's white people doing this, isn't it? Oh, hon, I knew that it was white teachers, like uber progressive white teachers who feel like, this is what I never got. This is one of those situations where I'm like, am I going to get in trouble for saying this?
Oh, no.
What? What do you, are you feeling guilt over something? You know, there's this idea of white guilt, right?
Right.
Have you done something where you feel like you have to make up for it by being uber woke on issues related to race? Me, I know that I'm not racist.
Right.
I don't feel the need to prove that to other people. I'll prove it in my interactions where I treat everyone with dignity and respect. And I don't think twice about it.
Well, my personal opinion on that is that it's people seeking attention because they feel like they're just too bland and they need a little attention. But I don't know. I hope that people have a good heart going into some of these things,
right.
But you're not expressing it as a, you know, big heart for everyone. You're expressing it as a little heart for some. And I think that it's an attention thing. It's an attention grab.
Probably a combination. A little attention.
Your face was like, oh no, what are you going to say, Nicole?
Can I say this? No, probably. It's always, you know, I mean, not that I can get canceled, but it's like, you know, I don't want to offend anybody. But I asked Alicia, and she's like, yeah, when I hear from parents,
oh, it is.
And even like parents of biracial kids, it's white teachers doing this. And so 100%, it's this deep-seated guilt. And I'm like, well, you must be racist then, because if you feel the need to that heavily compensate for whatever sort of demons you have going on, it makes me wonder, like, what have you done?
Or you've been convinced that you're racist. That's the thing, and that's what I think, that's the continuation of it, right? Is that these teachers have been convinced that they're racist or whatever they've, you know, just being white is racist.
Right.
And so then they're now teaching kids the same thing. So then kids go on to think, well, I, you know, just by being white, I'm racist, so I need to compensate somehow.
Yeah, or by being black, I'm a victim.
Or being
the, And that's just inherently how I'm going to be treated. And I'm always going to be pushed down, pushed down, pushed down, which we don't want kids to think that.
No.
We want them to go through life thinking I can do anything. I need to work hard and all of that. It's just ridiculous.
And there are always obstacles for every child. I mean, every human being has obstacles to get to where they want to be. But everybody has different. And all of them are surmountable.
Yeah. And it's not to say racism doesn't exist.
Yes.
Of course it does.
Of course.
Of course it does. But when you create racism out of freaking thin air,
right,
it does not help when real instances of racism arise because nobody's going to give them the time of day because they're like, oh, them over there, they call everything racist. Don't worry about it. It's like, no, some things actually are. Let's focus on those. Okay. Good comments today. Per the usual, let's end with our closing sanity check. Talking about bulges today. Bulges.
Wow.
Bulges in my favorite store, Target. So I'm sure you've been paying attention that there's this whole controversy around Target. It's the new Bud Light thing where you have a lot of folks on the right who are encouraging a boycott of Target and are making a decision amongst themselves to boycott Target. Now, I think there are some legitimate reasons for this. I also think whenever you have an instance like this, the anger can go too far where it's almost mimicking far left cancel culture. So let me explain what I mean. So there was a couple things. It's Pride Month, if you didn't know, coming up in June. And of course, you just, every corporation and company wants you to know that they support the LGBTQ plus community. And so, which this is a total side note because I do consider myself an ally to the gay community, but don't you find it a little weird that we have one day a year that's dedicated to people who fought and died for this country and a full month that's dedicated to people based on who they sleep with? I find that a little odd. Anyway, I digress. So Target had this line of, you know, they had their pride thing front and center when you walk in the store. And there were some items that I will say, you know, yeah, that is going to raise some alarm bells. For instance, there was this these bulge swimsuits where it said they were tuck-friendly construction, extra crotch coverage. And now there were some misinformation on social. These were adult swimsuits. Now, I know some people complained like, oh, you know, maybe kids could see them or they were all in the same pride area.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a teenager, you're the same size as an adult for the most part, so you could probably wear them.
I'll be honest, I'm not outraged by the bulge
right.
covering swimsuit. If you're an adult and you want to buy that bulge swimsuit, fine. Why would I care?
I don't think it's about who would buy it. I think it's about it being front and center and in with children's clothing as well as adults and swimsuits for everyone.
So not the end of the world, but there was a couple bigger issues with Target. Where there was a designer that like worships mm-hmm. Satan that Target opted to partner with for Pride Month designs. Now, again, I want to just weed through a little misinformation because there was a lot of pictures put out there about all this designer's stuff glorifies violence in Satan. Now, there were a couple items that this designer created for Target. And I don't find any of them particularly problematic. There was a Too Queer for Here tote bag. That's the designer up in the upper left-hand corner, if you're watching, that I believe. But that shirt he's wearing was not designed for Target. There was a fanny pack that said, "We belong everywhere." And then there was a Cure Transphobia sweatshirt. Okay, like I'm not particularly offended by any of them. The issue was though that people went and found other things that this designer had done and said, is this really the person that Target ought to be partnering with? So for instance, on their Instagram page, this designer had some pins that are incredibly problematic. There was one that said, heteronormativity is a plague. There was a pin that showed a gravestone and it said, "Bury cis feelings." So cis is like, you identify as the gender that you were born with. And so what, you want to like kill cis people? I don't get it. And then there was one that said, "Satan respects pronouns." And then this is the worst one. There was a guillotine and it said, "Homophobe headrest." So they want to chop the heads off of people who they consider homophobes. So that stuff, I'm like, yeah, I don't think Target should be partnering with a designer where if you've got, you know, a young adult who might buy that innocent looking fanny pack and say, "Oh, who's this designer?" You got a teen. "Oh, I'm interested in this designer. I like this." And then they go and see homophobe headrest pin with a guillotine. Probably not who Target should be partnering with. And so again, legitimate anger. And I don't think it's cancel culture when you decide I'm not going to shop somewhere. I'm not going to spend money there. I don't like what they're doing. That is a free economy. Now, I think it was taken a little too far with some of the outrage over Pride Month. For instance, there is now this pushback over Kohl's. So what did Kohl's do? Okay. Well, people were mad that Kohl's is selling this Pride onesie. And the Pride onesies got, you know, a woman with the LGBTQ plus flag and some kids, but it doesn't have any blatant messaging on it that I would be upset by or that feels like it's indoctrination. There's also a picture of these two dads with kids and they're wearing these shirts that say, be proud. If a parent wants to buy their kid, their little baby, a pride onesie, I don't see the problem with that. So I think, again, it goes back to what we were just discussing earlier, this sort of pick your battles situation. Like, what is worthy of outrage and is actually going to move the needle? And what is just sort of fear-mongering? And to me, is it worthy of outrage when one of the nation's largest retailers hires a brand designer that has pins encouraging beheading of people they consider to be homophobes? Yeah, that's worthy of outrage. That's worthy of pushback. But a onesie that's got a family on it celebrating pride when we live in a country where being gay is fairly acceptable. I mean, I know that there are certainly some people for religious reasons who don't support it. I don't see any issue with that. And I don't see how that's trying to indoctrinate kids. I think if you're a parent, let's say you're gay and you are going to take your little baby out to a pride festivity and you want him in a onesie, I just don't see the issue with that. So I think it's really about what's going to move the needle as society, right? What's reasonable, what's unreasonable. And let's fight like hell against the unreasonable stuff. But I think be careful not to take it too far, where in my mind, it really starts to mimic some of the unreasonable outrage culture on the far left. All right, as always, thank you for your comments and contributions to the show today. Thank you to newest subscribers to Undivided who just hopped on. As I said earlier, we're offering 7-day free trials for a limited time only. So go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. You can find out how to sign up to support the show. You can also figure out where you can listen and watch clips from the show. You can send Nicole and I nice little messages, like the sweet woman who sent us a message and then sent us crocheted bears and kitty cats, which we really love. Okay, in the meantime, for subscribers, we're having our monthly live Q&A tomorrow night, and you should see a notification about that on Patreon and Locals. I hope to see you there. Bring your best questions. In the meantime, we'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.